Hi, this is Steve Gilmore, and this is the Gilmore Gang. And I'd like to welcome our latest member, a fly. There's a fly in the studio and in the ointment, and its name is Google. But we'll get to that in a minute, because there are varying things. Doc, you need to be, Tina, you need to put Doc full screen. Okay, so we'll introduce some people, and there will be others, or at least one other joining in a bit. So we'll start with the ever-present, omnipresent invader of Facebook of the former decade, and now we'll find out what he thinks about this latest exploit, Robert Scovel. Welcome.
What's up? My point is Arrington was wrong then, and he's wrong today. But we'll talk about that when he's on the show later.
Okay, well, we'll see. Let's see. To my left, from the fabulous Ribbit headquarters, is Kevin Marks.
Hi there.
Also formerly a jaundiced supporter of the Google empire, so we know what he thinks.
Now I'm robustly magenta, yes.
Yes. Welcome.
Yeah, I think Facebook should let people get stuff out, like just like Robert always used to say.
Okay, so we're not going to talk about that. And then from the Computer History Museum, an appropriate place for Ben Franklin to join us. Oh, I'm sorry, Doc Searles.
Hey, guys. I manage to hear about every fourth word you say, but I look good, so that's cool.
Oh, okay. Well, that'll make for an appropriately data-constrained conversation. All right. So, and then, like I said, maybe Arrington will show up. Maybe he won't. Any more housekeeping? I don't think so. Oh, I do want to review my favorite moment of last week's show. So I'm going to do a reenactment, which is... I asked Robert at the end of the show, he said that Silverlight was dead. Can we have Robert on camera, please?
Sure.
Thanks. So he said, Silverlight is dead. And I said, really? And you said?
Really?
And then I said, really? And you said.
We could go on for an hour.
No, it was about 3 seconds. The second one, I said, really? And you said, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was my favorite moment. It illustrates just how firm all of these opinions really are. Okay.
Well, it's still not on the iPhone. It's still not on my iPad. It's still not on my PlayStation. And it's still not on my Google TV or my Roku box. So I think it's dead.
But, I mean, that was all true.
It just has lots of promise.
All right. Well,
okay.
Doc, you're locked up, so the experiment with real internet, I think you may need to go back to the other one, but we'll stay with this for a while because we can hear you at least. All right, so Robert, what's your take on the latest kerfuffle?
Well, I think we have to go back to the Gilmore Gang 3 years ago, or 2 years ago, something like that.
Well, we have to go back to the notion of you own your own data, which was the attention trust, which was about 1943. But go ahead.
But, you know, back then I wanted to get my emails out of Facebook and put them back into Google. And Arrington kept saying, you know, arguing me on that show, saying, no, that's wrong. My data's in Facebook, and I don't want you to take my data out of Facebook and put it somewhere else. And Facebook didn't want me to either. They kicked me off for a day. And so that ended that experiment. And today Google's coming in 2 years too late, trying to shut down the door and saying, hey, Facebook, you're stealing all of our data and you're not giving it back. Well, that's true, but the war is over today. The world is different today than it was 2 years ago. Today there's 600 million people on Facebook. How many people are total on the internet? 2 billion, 3 billion, and 2 billion people, a billion and a half, something like that. So basically one out of every three or four people is on Facebook already. There's no more data in Google to steal. It's all on Facebook. And that's why Google's so up in arms. They need to start a new social network, and they need a reef to build off of, and they want Facebook to open up so that they can suck data out, you know, suck our social graphs out and start a new social network. And Vic Indotra is... trying, but he's totally he's totally gifting this world to Facebook.
So what you're saying is that they won, so we now have to bow down to them, basically.
No, I think Facebook actually will open up even more. In fact, Facebook is way more open than they were 2 years ago, right? I can click on Huffington Post and say sign in, and all my data shows up on Huffington Post. That's because Facebook has become more open to moving your data around, or take it even further. You go to a music site and sign in, and all the music you've liked on Facebook or somewhere else automatically comes over to that new service, right? Because Facebook's data, the data around your social graph is open. It's just not the social graph. You still can't take an email address. Like, I can't take Kevin Marks's email address and put it into Google Contacts. And will they open that? You can't API. You can't suck off in Facebook. You can't use any API to take an email address out of there and move it somewhere else. You know, because they still think that's the last bastion of privacy, and where you think you have some control of your email address, which is totally bullshit. But it was bullshit 2 years ago. It's bullshit today. I think Facebook might even open that up, because I think Facebook's won. Facebook is so far ahead of the rest of the world in terms of identity, in terms of social graph, and in terms of understanding who we are and what our behaviors are around the web. It's not even funny.
Okay, Doc, you're still sort of locked up visually, but are you still here with us?
Yeah, I can hear you fine.
All right, so talk.
Oh, I think it's interesting that that Facebook has won, but it's won for now, maybe, you know. But, you know, trees don't grow to the sky, and it's not bigger than the web. As far as I'm concerned, the web has won. The web won a long time ago, but even the web isn't the last thing. And by the way, as long as I have the floor, check out ishareedwhat.com. It's a nice little hack by Joe Andrew, who's a friend here, who's been here at the Internet Identity Workshop, that shows exactly what you're sharing when you use Facebook Connect. And it's often not what people think that they're sharing. It's pretty neat. So just check it out, ishareedwhat.com.
Okay, Kevin, what do you think?
Well, I think, you know, this is something that's been going on for a while. Certainly we had this problem when we were building Google Friend Connect and wanted to connect to Facebook. And at that point they said, no, you can't connect to us. And we said, why? And they said, we'll get back to you on that, but you're not allowed to. So Google has maybe finally got fed up with this. Doesn't surprise me. But, you know, Facebook has got a bit better over the last 3 years. And there's the ability to export the stuff you've uploaded. But they're holding on very tightly to the contact data and the connection data, and that is something that, you know, as Robert complained about 3 years ago, it is a problem. What they are doing is letting you bridge it out to telephones and things. We're seeing that with the mobile stuff. They're writing it from the Facebook into the Android into the iPhone. So that piece is starting to make a bit more sense for them. But they are really trying very hard to stop anyone else take advantage of that except on their terms.
Okay, well, I guess that's it. It's a great Facebook world we live in now.
Well, I mean, I look at all the mobile apps on my iPhone. A lot of them I sign in with Facebook. If I go over to TechCrunch and I want to comment, I sign in with Facebook. I go to Pandora, I sign in with Facebook. I mean, Facebook is becoming our fingerprint that we touch these websites with, and all of a sudden the website knows who we are. I think it's really interesting. I just got a Microsoft Xbox Kinect last night, and Xbox Live is a fingerprint that's similar. That it now recognizes my face. It recognizes when I'm standing in front of that camera, and it'll be interesting to see if Microsoft uses that to build off of. So far, they haven't been able to, but maybe with this new Windows Phone 7, they'll be able to do that.
What was the name of the guy in 1984?
Winston Smith.
Orwell?
Winston Smith, exactly.
Winston Smith, yeah.
So we're talking now about how the new shiny interface to the omnipresent monitoring of everybody. It's an upgrade to the look and feel of totalitarianism.
It is a telescreen, and it does try and get you to do physical exercise. Just it is.
I'm actually really sore this morning after doing it last night.
Scoble, Robert, 15431, you're not doing your physical jokes well enough.
Right. Searle's duck. Not enough humor yet. Come on, tell us a joke. I mean, you told me a lot of funny jokes in the last 2 days, 3 days.
I said there's a fly in my pants. You said there's one on the set.
Well, that wasn't one of them. But
no, it wasn't one of them. I don't know. I
mean, they're all sort of.
It's a joke that we think that Facebook is the end of times. It's another trap, and it's a fun one to be in for now, and we're going to move on to other ones.
You know. Well, I
can't wait for the next thing that Robert's going to get all excited about.
Well, you can continue to be excited about things as other things come online. I think it's more the truth. I mean, I don't agree with anybody on this.
As far as I'm concerned, in principle,
right? No, I think Google should just suck it.
Yeah, I think blocking Facebook is a bit silly looking.
No, it's not silly. It's completely undermines their alleged openness, and once again points out that they'll do whatever they have to do to catch up in this case, and I don't think it's going to work. I think Facebook's going to say, excuse me, but I got to check, please, basically.
Yeah, right. I think it's over, first of all, and second of all, I think it really undermines their ability to become an identity system on the internet. By putting up the walls, they're going to be even less likely to work with Facebook. You know, and Zuckerberg already is pretty pissed at Google.
Facebook is the one that's been evading and havering over this for years and years.
Google is
in effect taking a leaf out of what Microsoft did with the contacts exchange. So when Microsoft did contact import export for their online stuff, what they did was a bunch of reciprocal agreements with everyone else. They said, okay, we will do contact import from you, and you can get contact export from us. So you can get the Hotmail contacts for your onboarding, and we want to bring in your contacts into our system too. And that was, and then they went around and negotiated a bunch of those agreements with people and agreed some interchange stuff. Yeah. So Google is falling back on a sort of Microsoft worldview here, which is a shame for Google, I think.
I think Zuckerberg, at the end of the interview, after the cameras were, or the recording was off, he said they're going to come out with one more big announcement this year, and I bet it's going to be an announcement with Apple. Google is forcing Zuckerberg to get into bed with Microsoft and Apple, and I think it's fascinating.
I mean, the other half of this is we've spent the last 4 days, Doc and I spent the last 4 days at IAW and at the OpenID summit on Monday, which was held at Facebook, where we're trying to put together a generalized OpenID Connect that's built around OAuth and will be supported by Facebook and others as well. That conversation is still going on. And is getting there, getting closer, but it isn't helped by this kind of
But it doesn't matter if your icon doesn't get on every website and every mobile app. We already have three icons, right? We have the Facebook icon, the Twitter icon, and the Google icon, right? And some people have a Yahoo or some other icon. Are they going to add yet another icon to this world? Are you going to convince 300,000 developers to add another icon to their apps?
I mean, how about adding a new icon that's generic and covers all of those, and you can put whatever other icons you want behind it, including Facebook's and Google's and Microsoft's and everybody else's?
I think it's over. I think when companies open up like this, they know that they've won.
Do you want an answer?
No, it's not a matter of winning. It's a matter of choice. Okay, so, I mean, do you want Facebook to be the only one? Do you want the other ones to go away?
So, Robert, if you actually want a sensible
answer... Why do they have to go away?
The answer is you can use the your email address's identity to log in, and using Webfinger and Discovery, you can get to the point where you can discover which other identities you want to bind to that. And that's part of what we've been working on, so that you don't have to end up with a million buttons on there. And part of the discussion this week has been around making sure that when we come up with OpenID Connect... it does support that protocol as well, and does support email-based lookup rather than just a quicker way to get the same set of buttons up.
And on top of that, I mean, just so people know that the too many buttons thing is called the NASCAR effect. So it looks like a NASCAR car. We've got all these logos that are advertising somebody's service or another. But the thing is that those things can all be back-ended. You know, you don't have to have just, you know, choose one of those. And there are a lot of people, you know, there may be 500 million people on Facebook, but it doesn't include my mother, my sister, and, you know, about half the people I know, and I'm a techie.
Wow, that's really amazing, because my wife's entire elementary school class from Tehran, Iran, is on Facebook.
And my son's entire junior high school class is on it, but his mother's not.
Yeah.
And his mother matters. So it's,
yeah, but
it's,
what, Doc, I don't understand the logic of just because somebody has scale doesn't mean that anybody else has to go away. I mean, you know.
No, I'm not saying that at all.
When the internet, you know, when something on the internet breaks, you're right around it. When the email went down the other day, we went to Chatter, and, you know, I mean, there's always these services. I mean, everybody says that, including Scoble, says that FriendFeed is dead, but it's humming right along there.
With 100 users.
That's not my point. My point is the people that are using this system continue to use it. It's not like it breaks because fewer people use it. It still works.
As long as the search has actually been breaking. They've been investing no engineering time in keeping it up.
I'm not arguing that point. What I'm saying is that the 404 architecture of the web also extends to so-called commercial and proprietary and other kinds of environments. Like the App Store. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, the web is right now being challenged by the App Store, not by open versus closed. I think those are artificial concepts. And what's happening is that people will tend to, the water will flow into the areas that it needs to in order to get whatever it is that we're doing done. And so I don't see why Facebook's power does anything to anybody else.
I'm not saying that at all. What I'm saying is that I'm taking exception to the suggestion that winning eliminates the need for anything else. You know, or that what they've done is won just because they're leading.
Well, I don't think Robert's saying that winning precludes anybody else.
Well, it suggests that others are losing.
It's really hard to convince developers to put another thing into their apps when one thing is there and it works for most people. You know, I look at my Cinchcast. I sign in with Facebook. I put my Facebook email address and password in and sign in, and it works. What are you going to do to convince that developer that something else is better? I don't know.
Well, if the developer is willing to not have, is the developer only using Facebook and nothing else?
No, they have Twitter there too, and they have Gmail sign in as well. Yeah.
And if they have
three icons, why add a fourth?
I'm talking about the user. If the user has other choices, you know, I mean, every developer does not control what every user does. If the user has at their disposal
momentum, you know as well, momentum is a powerful thing.
I'm not denying that. We're talking past each other here, and I'm suggesting that it's perfectly fine that Facebook appears to win at this moment in time, and there'll still be plenty of other choices out there for users as well as developers, and that the scope of what developers choose to do does not contain all the choices that a user has, that any one big developer might do.
No, but it does. It does suggest that, you know. I mean, that in an era of no barriers to entry for almost anybody to get on the network, the index or the shelf space becomes the issue. And, you know, shelf space is mind space. And if you have something that the majority of people are aware of versus other services which don't have that same kind of traction, it moves toward the larger, more established entities. Okay. So the question is whether there's any kind of strategic value in what my question is there any strategic value in what Google has just done? I think it's...
I don't care. Yeah. Maybe no. No, not at all. But that's well, not...
That's so that's
making,
where we...
I'm making a different point. I think Kevin is making the same different point, but I think it's a lost point if all we're talking about is what Google and Facebook are doing.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, the commentary on TechMeme and you know the little that I've seen of this issue since it surfaced last night seems to suggest that it's going to be either Google is going to be successful at you know changing the conversation. I mean, this is the kind of thing that we see in elections. You know, and either it works or it doesn't. Is this going to work for Google in terms of establishing themselves as somehow on the side of all of data portability, whatever the hell that means, or is it going to be seen as a setback for Google's notion of being open and you know the logic of their spread? To me, it's just a you know it's a number two, you know, raising their hand and saying, we're number two. We need to catch up here. So we're going to wrap ourselves in the mantle of data openness, and I think it's laughable.
But they've been doing data openness for a long time. You can't ding Google on that.
I just did.
Well, but no.
Well, take it back. Take it back now.
No, they actually have genuine data openness. That's the thing. That's one of the things that I'm proud of them for the time I spent there of actually making this stuff.
Yeah, but they don't have the data that matters anymore. that's what this whole argument's about.
Well, they, you know, that's not quite true. They have a lot of good data.
Come on, they have a lot of good data
from those Android phones.
I want to hear what Kevin was trying to say. Go ahead, Kevin.
That same contact store Google has is now being populated by all the Android phones out there and is actually getting richer and more useful than just the Gmail stuff that was in there before. They do have a bunch of useful stuff. And part of this, and I suspect part of this is a pushback against Facebook's Android app going, hi, we're going to hoover every contact out of your phone and stuff it into Facebook.
So after trying to hoover...
I think it's not about contacts anymore. That's my whole point.
After hoovering or trying to hoover everybody's Gmail contacts into Buzz and that failing, come on, what are we talking about here?
Yeah, what the world is about now is our social behaviors around the world, you know, and it's on Facebook. It's not on Google. Google doesn't know what music I liked on Pandora. I mean, come on.
Does Facebook?
Yes, absolutely it does.
I mean,
you can go and see
that was
all
after the last Facebook exploit is basically what you're saying. Oh, okay. Yep. So there's a lot of data that they stole.
You can see all the brands I like. I've gone and clicked thousands of websites and clicked like, including like TechCrunch and stuff, you know? You can go to my profile and see everything I like, all the music, all the movies, all the books. All that shit is there. And it's getting richer and richer and richer. Every time I click like on something, it gets richer. And Google has none of that data.
Okay. I agree. They don't have any of that.
Robert, is having all that data out there only a good thing?
Only where all that data where?
I mean, all the data you're exposing that you've chosen to expose out there.
Absolutely, I get so much serendipitous experience from sharing that data with people. It's unbelievable. I mean, I joked around. If you listen to the interview I did with Mark Zuckerberg, I joked around that he's influencing the restaurants I go to in Palo Alto because he's let me stalk him at the restaurants he's going to. So I know which restaurants he's going to. I know he was at the French Laundry two weeks ago, right? And I know he goes to McDonald's a lot. And I get to see what his behavior is. And if it's interesting to me, I get to go there and have a different experience than I would otherwise, you know? I think that's good for us.
I guess it's good for you. It's
brought so many people into my life by sharing it on Foursquare, sharing it on Twitter, sharing it on, everything about my life is open book. You can go to Facebook and see what kind of music I like. People invite me to concerts because of that. It's crazy what happens to you when you are open with your data and you share it.
What about, so have you had any stalkers?
Everybody's a stalker. I have 150,000 stalkers, and I stalk 150,000 people.
Okay.
What is a stalker? Define
Let me put it this way.
A negative?
Anybody wanted to do you harm?
Not that I've known, but you know. Yeah.
Well, that's you.
Yes, there are people who have wanted to do me harm. You know, Lauren Feldman wanted to do me harm. He came after my business. And what happened to him? He went away. Seriously, yeah. Haters don't get attracted. People who don't share data and who aren't honest with this world go away. They don't get followers. They don't get interactions. They don't get invited to cool things, you know. And they don't get experiences in life that are magical.
Oh, I think you can have lots of magical experiences without being socially exposed all the time.
I've got invited to the private tour of the White House because of this stuff, right? Yeah. I've gotten on the deck of an aircraft carrier because of this stuff. I've been in a hot tub in Sweden because of this stuff. On and on and on.
Okay, but your life is neither typical nor an ideal model for a lot of people.
No, but you can learn from the extremes.
No doubt about it. I'm not saying you can't learn
right.
from it.
So you asked a question, and he answered it. So what's your...
You can go to the restaurant that Mark Zuckerberg eats at now because he lets you stalk him. That's interesting.
Oh, wow, I can go to McDonald's now. Wait a minute, I already went to McDonald's today.
You know, I enjoy your company, but I don't really care what you eat. Not a whole lot, you know. I mean, Facebook was wonderful for running into Steve this week. I'm here today in part because... You know, Steve and I got to hang out because I exposed my...
No, it was Foursquare, actually.
I was on Facebook.
It was Foursquare,
rather.
Yeah.
That's perfectly cool. I got no problem with that. Where I have a problem right now is assuming, and I hope the noise in the background isn't too bad, is assuming that because we're you know, because infinite exposure to a zillion people by Robert Scoble, friend of Mark Zuckerberg, is a good thing for him or for those two people, that's what everybody ought to develop toward. And I think that's actually a fairly limited view of what the scope of development might be. And I worry about how much development is not being done.
Take it out of the Google and Facebook world. Go to PlanCast. I can go to PlanCast and look at thousands of events and see which ones my friends are going to and which ones are popular. It helps me choose my events for the future. That's just a little example of how social has totally changed something and made it possible for everybody to have a better experience.
Everybody.
Everybody, you go to PlanCast, you search for a tech event there, you get a list, and it shows you which ones, you know, Doc Searles is at, and which ones I'm at, and which ones have 1,000 people going to it, which ones have 5 people going to it, and you can make a decision. Do you want to go to a popular event? Do you want to go to a small niche event? Do you want to go to the one that Doc Searles is at? It's not just us, man.
Hey, Robert. Robert, slow down. I want to hear Doc at least a little.
There are other people who don't want to do that.
Okay, but so they don't have to do that. What's forcing you?
I'm married to somebody who is appalled at the notion of exposing any of her personal life.
And she doesn't do that, right?
There's Amish, too, who don't want a telephone. I mean, I don't care. I really don't care about the normal people out there, you know? If I cared about them, I wouldn't have been doing this for 10 years.
Well, I tried to stop you,
I'm very glad
Robert.
You're doing this. You're a wonderful pioneer, and it's fun to watch what you do.
But Doc, I don't understand why. Who are you protecting from themselves? I mean, if they don't want to share this data, then they don't.
Anybody from themselves. This is like the talk I'm talking to the telescreen. You are living a social life. You have to live the social life. We're building things for your social life. You need to expose everything to everybody
else.
What's
oppressing you, it sounds like what's oppressing you is the evangelism of somebody who loves this stuff.
No, I'm not. I don't feel the least bit oppressed.
Oh, okay.
I'm amused by it, actually. I just think it's one view, and it's a wonderful one, but it also has this box around it that says, everything that's in the social space is wonderful, and there's this gigantic space outside of the social space that is personal and isn't on the computer and isn't online and isn't in any of these particular things, where, you know what, a lot of development can take place there too. And if you're wearing social blinders, you miss it.
Everything I'm talking about today is about offline, okay? PlanCast is about offline events. Pandora is about music and discovery of music and discovering new ways to hear new groups, you know?
There's social online windows to offline. And what I'm saying is that there,
Absolutely. I discover restaurants by who's checking in on Facebook or on Foursquare. And if Steve Gilmore goes to a place, I'll call him up and say, was that place any good? And if he says yes, I'll go there next time.
I do that shit too. It's not. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm also saying it's not the only thing.
Okay.
There's still Amish in the world. I really don't care.
No, you're making a false distinction here. I'm busting you for it. It's not we're social or we're Amish. Okay?
There's lots of gradations between that, too, right?
We're not being in the social world by calling them Amish, but you're the world there.
Yeah.
Okay?
I don't care about late adopters. I really don't care about them. I study early adopters. What? I like early adopters. My dad didn't have a color TV for a long time. I had HDTV 3 years before he did. I don't care about people who buy into something 3 years, 5 years, 10 years later, or never, right? There's lots of people who are never going to buy it. My ex-wife's father told me he would never, ever touch a computer. And guess what? He died never, ever touching a computer. And that's great. But he's gone now, and the new world is moving in.
You're still putting people down here. I'm going to ask you something.
Totally.
Listen to me. Is there a distinction other than you're social or you're Amish or a late adopter? Is there any other distinction?
No, there's gradations between that, right? And there's late adopters in video games and early adopters in cars. Somebody might buy a brand new Tesla and not have a color TV. There's lots of gradations. You can't paint everybody with one brush. But
good.
this world is moving and is interesting because it's moving. And people who are dragging their feet, not participating or ignoring it or saying it's not important, I just don't care. I just don't care anymore.
Go ahead, don't care.
People, when the telephone came out, I'm sure people had arguments like this on radio. I'm not going to get a telephone. It's so intrusive. The freaking thing rings in my friend's kitchen, and he has to answer it. Oh, my God. Social disruption.
There's another characterization there, which is that you're either an early adopter or a late adopter, and that's one continuum, but there are other variables involved.
I'm sure there are. It's interesting. Gary Vaynerchuk and I did a speech in front of a bunch of people, and he asked how many people thought they would never, ever get a cell phone. The entire room raised their hand. Now everybody has a cell phone. And he said, how many people think they're never going to check in on Foursquare? And a good number of the people raised their hand. He goes, when you start getting free beer, you're going to check in. Our behavior changes over time because of this stuff. And that is happening in a big way. It's not avoidable anymore that this is happening. All you have to do is look at how people are using Facebook and Twitter and Foursquare and Plancast and all these social services. Even my recipes now are coming to me based on popularity and who my friends are and stuff like that. It's just crazy what's going on. I think this argument's over. It's 10 years from now, we're going to look back and go, yeah, that was a fun argument.
No, I mean, the argument isn't over because, you're both saying things that are true to each other.
Oh,
you
absolutely. Know?
Right.
You understand what I'm saying?
The future.
This reminds me of the... I used to think that this technology called RSS was really important. No, I did.
Yeah, I did too.
And everybody, for a very long time... either they would just, walk away, or they would, they would say, this isn't important. It's not popular. Nobody's going to use this. Look at, it's hard to use, blah, 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 all that kind of stuff. And it had nothing to do with what the importance of RSS was. RSS changed the world. Now, some people will agree and some people will disagree, but it doesn't really matter what we say about it. In terms of, quote, winning this argument, the fact is, Doc's already acknowledged the power of what we see here, and he also is acknowledging the power of something else, which I haven't really heard. Evidently, it's some channel that his mother can play on, as opposed to Facebook, but.
My mother's dead, so she's not playing in any channels.
All right, well, somebody's mother. I remember.
Right, you know, to take it back to the modern world, Zuckerberg's own parents weren't on the internet until about 3 years ago, and they thought that their kids were doing some weird experiment that
fail.
They were, and that would fail, and they would go back to school like they should have.
Well, parents are afraid that their children are going to, you know, never get a job. They're always going to be holding their hand out for lunch money. What?
I was just saying, you know, did they ask your kid why he dropped out of Harvard?
Yeah.
What were you doing there? Why'd you move out to the coast?
Yeah, here's a picture of Bill Gates. That's why.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't think that it's a question of winning this argument. Which is sort of looping back to what Doc, I think, was really complaining about, which is the notion that because something is ascendant, that means that it's winning, and that therefore that implies that others are losing. I think that...
Right.
I think the others are not winning, put it that way, if you want to use the winning...
But this is the argument I always have with Mike, which is that, you know, this isn't Highlander. It doesn't have to be, there can be only one. What can happen is that we can look at these things and find patterns and say, okay, there's a pattern there that we can reuse in other ways. Is there a way we can do that that doesn't involve us all reinventing that thing from scratch and actually able to reuse it with some agreement and interoperation? And that's the point of what we were doing at IAW all this week. We're sitting down with people and saying, okay, given that we've got a bunch of these things that are kind of similar, is there a way we can make them actually the same? So that the developers don't have to deal with like fiddly little differences between them, and that's how we end up.
But there's a tension between that strategy and the strategy that Facebook and others have employed, which is to basically say, "Yeah, there's no problem with making it the same. Do it like we're doing it, and you know, be part of our format and protocol." And you know, obviously, there's resistance to it. But on the flip side is who's necessarily going to adopt, you know, it's like the situation with Android. At a certain point, beyond the ability to harvest more impressions over mobile devices, what is the value proposition of Android in terms of revenue, and what happens if the economics of fragmentation overtake the value proposition of, you know, quote, it being free?
Oh, man, you're buying Steve Jobs' argument here. Or you've integrated or you have fragmented. Fragmented.
I'm not buying it. I've been saying that for a long time. I think it's true.
That, you know,
yeah. It's like, can it be blown up by one company? Steve Jobs can destroy that entire market tomorrow,
no,
like he's done before.
No, I'm not saying that. Yeah. I'm
Android
asking whether...
Android cannot be destroyed by Google.
Yes, exactly. Android can't be destroyed by Google. It doesn't matter what Google does at this point with Android. It really doesn't. It's bigger than Google. That's what they set loose in the world. What Android does is it allows a lot of other companies other than AT&T and Apple to participate in the smartphone business. It allows customers to have a lot more choices than Apple in the smartphone business. Choice is good. That's called an open marketplace. Android is about the open marketplace.
So when Google masquerades as an open, let's all play fair data provider by locking out Facebook and therefore creating a digital divide, I think, how does that resonate with... don't you think that there's going to be some payback for this choice on Google's part as to the value proposition of Android down the line?
Yeah, Google.
You think
loses,
people are going to?
They lose geek cred with that. It was a bad move, you know.
Yeah, but, I think it was a smart move. Makes them
But so what? Yeah, I mean, it's not just about Google versus Apple or Google versus Facebook. It's about closed versus open marketplaces. And Robert's point and your point about how Facebook has opened up in the marketplace is great stuff. I mean, the fact that
I didn't make that point. I don't agree with that.
You know, the fact that Facebook Connect is available to use as a sort of single
Facebook
sign-up.
Connect is a service that I use and value because it makes it a lot easier for me to be able to sign on to these ridiculous startups that I end up never using.
There you go. Well, okay. You know, it's another choice in the world. But the, you know, what we want, I would hope, is a marketplace that's more than your choice of captor. And, you know, Google's move with Android 3 years ago, but whatever it was.
I don't see it. I don't see them as captors. I think that that's a facile argument.
Most users don't look at the world. Most users don't look at the world that way.
I see the I see.
We do.
I see economics having certain patterns, and I personally, in my use of technology and my interest in technology, I'm as interested in those dynamics about what's going to happen, and therefore what am I going to place my time and energy on, than I am in the so-called concept of open. Not to say that open source and open technologies in general have profoundly changed the world. They have, and they will continue to do so. But the notion that somehow this is the, you know, that, you know, the notion that the web will win, for example, the web is a series of constructs that are currently working in concert. These app stores that are opening up are also a construct that is working, and they and it has incredible dynamics. And when I think about where I want to spend my time in terms of computer resources, I'm much more drawn to certain apps than I am to certain web versions of those apps. Not because one's rich and the other's not, but because there are some dynamics in this, in using the internet, which is, after all, sitting on top of TCP/IP, PIP, and HTML to a certain extent, to be able to use a concert of protocols, right, including video and other kinds of services, you know, peer-to-peer, et cetera, that is bigger than the web to me.
Sure.
The web is a visual construct, at least as it was originally designed or interpreted by, you know, Netscape. What are you showing us, Robert?
Instagram is the hottest mobile app of the last 2 weeks. They have 500,000 users in a couple of weeks. And how did this take off? It was because of Twitter and Facebook, the import of my friends into here, and the social behaviors that happen inside this app and that go back out to Facebook and go back out to Twitter to grab a little audience and bring it in here is just astounding. And it's very viral. And this is how Google could beat Facebook. But Google is not thinking this way. They're not thinking like a startup. They're thinking, oh, let's close the gates. Let's, put up the walls. Let's try to beat Facebook by, you know, becoming defensive. And this little startup, two people, proved you can beat, you know, everybody with a smartly done social app that, you know, is really pretty cool.
Comments?
That's nice.
I agree. Instagram's nice, but it's taking advantage of this infrastructure of openness, just like we were just saying.
So
the point is, these are all
these constructs of openness. But you know, according to Doc, I'm buying into Steve Jobs' framing of the universe.
Okay, you're going in a direction that sounded very much like what his attempt to reposition open and closed as fragmented and integrated.
But I mean, fragmentation has always been the problem of the kind of strategy that Google's employed with Android. Microsoft's been doing this for years to intense failure.
It's not just a problem; it's a solution as well. Fragmentation. Last night, I spent a bunch of time writing a piece for Linux Journal. I finished it just before this, talking to one Android developer about the fragmentation problem. It is quoted TweetDeck. You know, TweetDeck has to cope with all of these different Android phones and devices. If you look at what he quoted, what he pointed to rhetorically, he didn't provide a link, they're actually bragging on it. They're actually saying, isn't it great we run on all these different devices with one development effort? There's this great variety of devices.
Yeah, I mean, they've got to find some oxygen somewhere. I mean, you know, I've been using the iPad, the Twitter iPad app, and the Twitter iPhone app. Basically, I'm not using anything else except Twitter after hundreds of years.
Yeah, so what?
I mean, what I'm saying is that sure, TweetDeck is going to laud the opportunity of fragmentation, but I mean, does that mean that it's not a real issue?
It's an issue only to the extent that, you know, there's some people would prefer not to have it.
It's a question of what, you know, compared to what.
They've always wanted that.
Here's the thing.
We're
accustomed to a marketplace where big companies dominate. We want to talk about big companies versus big companies. Look at a mature marketplace like construction. It's all fragmentation. And guess what? You can build anything you want, anywhere you want, any way you want. And the main thing you have to cope with is just like zoning laws and stuff like that. Nobody says, geez, isn't it horrible? You know, isn't it great that my nails only work with these particular boards? You know, you make nails to work with all kinds of boards. You know, I mean, we get annoyed if we're trying to build something, if you need some special tool that works only with that particular I need an IKEA Allen wrench to screw together.
You're making a very powerful point, and the only thing that I'm trying to say is that by intermittently wrapping, I'm not saying you're doing this, but a lot of people are intermittently wrapping this discussion as the good guys versus the bad guys, the white hats versus the black hats, and that and Google, because they are slipping in terms of their ability to be able to control their destiny, I believe, they're reacting. I mean, they filed a lawsuit against Microsoft and the U.S. government because for some office deal that was done where Google was locked out of it because...
everybody but Microsoft is locked out of it.
Okay.
There was the Department of Interior put out an RFP for only Microsoft stuff, saying we're only going to take offers for Microsoft stuff. And Google split a gut over that, and a lot of other people split a gut over that, because why should the government be locked into one particular
vendor? I mean, it sounds like classic Y2K arguments here, only Google is the one that is making the arguments. It strikes me that the antitrust suit. The most important thing that was said in that trial was said by Bill Gates in the deposition. He said it for years before that, which was somebody's going to come along and smoke our ass.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Right. It happened almost immediately.
Yeah.
So instead, now what we're hearing is Google. If Google wanted to go and frontally attack Office, then and come up with enterprise regulation technologies that could compete in an RFP of that kind, that would be one thing. But they haven't. Who's the competition? Microsoft blew out the Office. The word processing, the packaged apps environment with Office as a suite. They decimated the marketplace, and nobody's ever returned to it, with the possible exception, which I don't agree with, that OpenOffice somehow is a viable competitor. Overseas, maybe. But, they basically destroyed that market. Now, I'm not suggesting that that's a good thing or a bad thing. I'm just saying that's what happened. So today, I see Google raising their hand. I mean,
Sorry, who destroyed the market? Microsoft or Google? I didn't quite follow that.
They overwhelmed the market. This is an argument
Microsoft,
for scale. This is like, to take this back to the Facebook argument. It's like, well, Facebook has got so much scale now that they're basically going to wipe out all of the competition, and then it's going to be an RFP for Facebook only in the future. That would be the analogy, right?
I see.
Okay. So all I'm saying is that I would, if I were Eric Schmidt, I would be having a little bit of indigestion over the fact that he is beginning to sound more and more like he did at Novell, which is basically, picking a losing argument and championing it in the face of, a lack of business decisions. On the other hand, Steve Jobs has come in with a different hand, and passed Microsoft in market cap. Now, it doesn't mean that they're winners or losers.
They passed them in revenues. Apple is bigger than Microsoft both ways.
Yeah, that's what I just said.
Yeah, pretty huge.
Yeah, it's enormous. So Google certainly is not without resources, and they have succeeded in completely changing everything. But at this point, they're sounding like, you know, second-class losers.
But so they made a bad judgment about.
But it's not.
How does this matter? How does it matter?
It matters to me for the same reason that RSS mattered to me. This is these things have a habit of turning out to be turning points.
Yeah,
and I think Google can recover from this, but you know, if they're supported in the notion that somehow they've done a smart thing here, or even a good thing, quotes good, I think that the people who are going to be damaged are going to be Google. Just like if Microsoft thinks that Steve Sinofsky has won the battle and the dreaded Ozzy has now been in retreat, and he takes advantage of that to decimate what's left of that company, I think it'll be a mistake that will be, Harvard Business School will be discussing for many years to come. So that's why I'm interested in it.
And if they are, I have a great email to start that book.
That's some nice bait. What's that?
Well, back in 2003, right before Flickr went to Yahoo, I told Bill Gates, Steve Sinofsky, Steve Ballmer to buy 13 different areas of companies, including Flickr, including Skype, including WikiTools.
Yeah, but Robert, that's like telling them to do what they're not going to do.
Exactly. And the answer from Steven Sinofsky was about this long, and it had the word business value repeated 13 times. Basically, he said, I'm running a $4 billion a year business. Go away.
Well, he's got a point, though.
he had a great point.
He still has a great point. It's still a $4 billion business. There are larger forces at play now.
I want to go on the record to say that Robert Scoble was the most important talent that Microsoft ever wasted.
Well, thank you. That's really an honor for hearing it from you, man. I disagree, but
you disagree with the one thing that the doc is agreeing with you about, which is that you're great. That's okay.
Thanks. Getting back to the Amish versus early adopter thing.
So it's Silverlight Ted, Robert?
What's that?
I want to see an animation of this.
No, you've got to see it. I mean, this came out of Tina and I were. Software. I'll let you go back to whatever you want to go back to, but it's not Scobalizer gang.
No, it's interesting. Somebody
but you're not going to
help because they're listening.
I don't care.
And they're saying, well,
You know how you don't care? I don't care either.
Yeah, I'm listening in.
So Tina and I were talking about. I was just laughing about that one moment, and she said, maybe we should cut those out and release them. And we figured out a plan after I argued that it was a mistake for a couple of hours.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. And so then I thought that the best way of doing it would be to reenact it so that there would be zero production time involved. And that's failed so far.
That was
but
my stick figure.
Did you know, by the way, once these get up on YouTube, you can link into a specific time in video. So you
oh,
can
really?
Do a whole...
Are you
oh,
sure?
Yeah, is yeah, that, yeah, I do it all
but
the time.
But that's blocked by IE9, right? Just kidding.
I don't know. I don't use IE9.
I know. I don't think you can use IE on a Mac.
Anyway, the point was that this guy's bashing.
No, it's not the point. It's your point.
It's my point.
Okay.
this guy is bashing me because he says I have ability to buy all these gadgets now. That's true today. I used to be laid off.
They were free then, and they're free now.
They're pretty free. And if you can always go into a GameStop and play with a game or go into an Apple store and play with an Apple device and have an opinion, right? You don't need to buy it.
And then you can be stalked as you do it.
Yeah. You know.
Hey, Robert Scoble's in a GameStop at the corner of...
He was bashing me. He was saying, well, early adopters can afford to buy both VHS and Beta. Well, I actually sold Beta and VHS in my consumer electronics store in San Jose, and people didn't buy both. They picked one, and they picked one for different reasons.
The reason that VHS won was because it was a two-hour, porn you know, you get more porn for
exactly
VHS. I mean, that's why it happened.
And that's where I disagreed with him. Most of the early adopters went with VHS. Most of the people who looked at a feature set and tried to make a rational decision went with Beta. You know, and we rented movies too, and I always pointed to the rental side. I said, "Look at all the rentals; they're VHS. You wanna buy a Beta that's sharper?" But
to say that that's not a rational decision, you know, that no, is it's rational.
But in Silicon Valley,
it played longer amounts of. It was cheaper and across. And it played longer.
But a lot of engineers in Silicon Valley bought Betas because they were sharper, right? And that's sort of the I guess that's where Doc and I are having this, you know, is it a binary thing, or are there other factors in play? And there's lots of factors in play when you talk about adoption or buying or, you know, who you are. Lots of things come into play there. I don't know. I like studying. One thing I like studying is the tip of the spear, the people who make those early choices, because they decide what the rest of the people are going to buy. Because, you know, after my video store had 20 videotapes, and we noticed most of the time the ones that rented were the VHS ones, we started going more and more and more toward VHS, and that's what made the rest of the market go VHS.
Is Facebook the VHS of today?
Yeah. Absolutely.
There you go. Yeah.
Absolutely. Facebook is.
So when was the last time you used a VHS, Robert?
A while ago, man.
We bought one.
That's the garage. Point.
Remember Facebook?
Yeah. We still have one in the garage.
Well, I don't think this is going to end well for either Facebook or Google, so I think it's important to. I apologize in advance for thinking something's important, Doc. But I think it's important that Google rethinks their attitude before it destroys everything that they're doing.
Yeah.
I think it's important that Facebook rethinks their attitude too.
Say again.
I think it's important that Facebook rethinks their attitude too, and there are signs that they are being a bit less cagey about this and behaving a bit better.
I don't see that at all. I think they've been as cagey as they could possibly be for as long as they possibly can be.
They called me this morning and they said, "You watch, we're going to be even more open in the future." They know that they've won.
Yeah, but
they know that they have your social graph, and that social graph is so freaking powerful. My wife is never going to move until all of her elementary school friends move, and I'm sorry, Doc's, you know, friends aren't on Facebook yet. Doesn't matter.
A lot of them are. That's right.
A lot of them are. And many are not.
That's all.
And those people are so locked in because their friends are there that they're not going to move no matter what. You know, Vic and Dotra can pull out a magic rabbit out of a hat and nobody's going to move.
Well, my problem is that this is not a magic rabbit. What they're doing. This is a dead dormouse.
What Vic is doing is setting up the magic rabbit. He's hoping he has a magic rabbit, and he's trying to set it up.
I think that kind of thinking is precisely what is malignant about this idea. The idea that he's setting up an open framework with a proprietary lock-in strategy, it's just Orwellian.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, well... You know, so they get the Microsoft of 2000 award.
It's true. It is not lost on me. When I was working at Microsoft, I saw Google come in and hire employee after employee and build a huge office up in Seattle, right? And Facebook's doing the same thing to Google right now, and it's not lost on me at all. All you have to do is sit in the front office of Facebook and see all your friends who used to work at Google come through the door, or a lot of Microsofties are there now too.
Yeah. On the other hand, I was driving somewhere. I was driving down to see Doc the other day, and I somehow took the wrong exit that I always do down there, and there's, you know, block after block of Google buildings, and I don't think that's what Facebook has.
Not yet.
Not yet. Not as big yet. No,
they're not yet.
Less than a tenth the size, but they've got a fair few buildings. Well, I was going from building to building there on Monday.
Yeah, it's crazy how fast they're growing. And I think they're going to grow way faster in the future. And after they go IPO in 2012,
I think that the velocity.
Like Google, they can make their own colored manhole covers.
Oh, they're copying all of Google's stuff. I mean, they have the kitchen like Google. They hired the Google chef. They have the Google wall in the front hallway. You know, they're totally copying Google. They're totally taking every good idea Google had.
The velocity of enterprise success is not about scale. It's about speed.
Yeah.
It's about copying.
Execution, that's true.
It's
being derivative.
The more that they can do with less, the better they will become.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's not bricks and mortar. It's
that isn't was a Google virtue too. Google's model was small teams kept acting chaotically, and
they're doing real well on the chaotic part right now.
Yeah,
they've really harvested that.
Google Wave shows the downside of that strategy.
No, Google Buzz shows the downside of it. I mean, and I can't wait for Google Me.
Well, we'll see. We'll see if Vic has a white rabbit up his hat in his hat.
A white rabbit. One makes you larger.
Bend over. Let me see your white rabbit here. Coming out of your ass. Right
okay. Somebody get Ben Franklin down off the off the pole. Taking too many electric jolts here.
Hey, Prop 19 didn't pass. We're not allowed to do that here.
Yeah, and that's another good thing. You don't want. I mean, taking drugs is not fun if it's legal. Exactly. I take drugs. Simstatin is my latest high. What it doesn't do to me is fantastic. There was a news report. I don't know. I was on a call and I didn't see it, but there was some news crawl headline that what Simstatin does for everything else. That it's not prescribed for is why it's fantastic. I totally agree.
What is it?
It's a statin. It's a cholesterol drug.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean if you can, I've been eating 17 eggs a day for the last 2 years to get into the program. I finally my level went up enough that I could get the damn thing. This is what I mean by legal drugs. It doesn't get you high, but it keeps you alive.
All right.
So I guess I want to thank Mike Arrington for his appearance. And we can read into that, whatever. Actually, he's Mike. Convinced me I'm going to be releasing a column on TechCrunch tomorrow morning. He's convinced me that there's something that needs to be done that only I can do. So I'm going to return to the fold once a week until my wife fires me. And it's pretty good. I think it's about the Ray Ozzie situation.
Awesome.
So you should look forward to that. And Doc, where are you off to?
I'm going back to Boston tomorrow morning, and I'm there until I go to Defrag. So I'll be at Defrag in Denver later this month, the 17th, I think, somewhere in there. And after that, I'm not sure.
And when's your book coming out?
Next September. It's due at the end of January. So I'm really going to hunker down on the book during the next couple of weeks. Next, when I'm not traveling. I'm hoping to travel less.
So. Okay. Scoble, what's your story?
I don't know what I'm doing.
Well, we know that, but...
No, your social network knows what you're doing, so just ask them.
Yeah, it's on PlanCast, and it's on Tuggle Me, if you really care.
Tuggle Me? I don't want to be Tuggle.
Ask your network what you're doing.
What is Tuggle Me, anyway?
I'm seeing... Tuggle Me is a way for you to schedule... Get it on my calendar. If you go to tuggle.me/scobalizer, you'll see my calendar, and you can see an open slot and say, I want to have lunch with you.
Okay, well, it's going to be Thursday at 1 next week. Cause...
I'm booked.
Are you?
Yeah, if you use Tuggle.me, you would know that.
How do you spell that?
Oh, well, that sucks.
Tuggle, tuggle.me/scobalizer. Okay, it hooks into my Google Calendar, which hooks into my Exchange Calendar, which hooks into my iPhone Calendar and my...
Well, see if you can change that. See if you can fix that, because it's going to be Thursday at 1.
Okay.
And you, Kevin?
I'm catching up on all the stuff that I got from Internet Identity Workshop this week and thinking about what the things we can build based on that and following up on those conversations. I got a lot out of that. It was very interesting.
Excellent. I want to thank Rackspace and particularly Rob Legess for bringing this show back to life, and TriCaster New Tech for making this video. I want to thank our producer and director, Tina Chase, and I appreciate everybody who showed up, and especially those who didn't. We'll see you again next time. Bye-bye.